Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After Midnight.
From the time he was very young, Gabriel sensed that his world was layered. He didn't have the language for it then. He only knew that certain rooms felt heavier than others, that darkness pressed in on him in ways that frightened him without explanation. At night, he begged to sleep in his mother's room, whispering that something was wrong in his own. When she asked what he meant, he would cry and say the same word every time. Evil. Even years later, the memory unsettled him, not because he could recall what he had seen, but because he couldn't. The fear had been real and overwhelming, yet its source had dissolved with time, leaving behind only the feeling. He remembered his room as darker than it should have been. He remembered shapes near his window, movement without form, and whispers that stopped the moment he tried to listen. At the time, no one connected it to anything larger. It wasn't until much later that Gabriel learned this sensitivity wasn't unique to him. Puberty marked the beginning of change, not just physically, but perceptually. He became more aware of people's moods, of shifts in energy, of spaces that felt unsettled. That was when the activity around him began to sharpen into something undeniable. He was 13 when he, his mother, and his younger brother moved into an apartment in Austin. The place itself wasn't remarkable. Beige walls, thin carpets, the kind of apartment that echoed too much when empty. They shared the space with his mother's close friend, Emmy, who worked with her and occupied the spare bedroom. One evening, Gabriel sat in the living room watching television with his brother. The apartment was quiet, the familiar late-night calm settling in. His brother fell asleep beside him, head tilted awkwardly against the couch. Gabriel stayed awake to finish the episode. That was when he'd noticed the candle. It sat on the kitchen counter, small and decorative, something they never used. As he watched, the wick flickered faintly, then glowed. The candle appeared to be trying to light itself. He stared at it, heart beginning to race. No one had touched it. There was no flame, no melted wax, just a stubborn glow that refused to fully ignite. Unnerved, Gabriel turned off the television and carried his brother to his bedroom. He left the door open, lying in bed where he could still see into the kitchen. The candle continued to glow weakly, as if struggling to exist. In the morning, he checked it. The wick was untouched, the wax pristine. As the weeks passed, strange sounds became common, scratches along the walls, noises that sent their cat into frenzied panic. Eventually, the cat bolted out the door one afternoon and never came back. They moved apartments within the same complex, and nothing changed. Then they moved to a different complex entirely. That was when the activity escalated. One afternoon, Gabriel and his brother were home alone. Gabriel chased him down the hallway in play, shoe raised dramatically as a mock weapon. His brother darted into their mother's room, slamming the door behind him. Gabriel waited outside, smiling, shoe ready. The doorknob turned slowly. The door opened. Gabriel threw the shoe and hit nothing, and the room was empty. Confused, he stood there for several seconds before hearing water running in the bathroom. His brother was inside taking a bath. When Gabriel asked how he'd opened the bedroom door, his brother insisted he hadn't. He'd gone straight to the bathroom. That evening, while they waited for their mother to come home, Emmy's bedroom door flew open violently. Gabriel saw it clearly from his own room. The force of it sent both boys into panic. They called their mother, begging her to hurry home. She dismissed it as a draft. Things grew worse after that. Gabriel began hearing voices when he was alone, his mother calling his name, his brother laughing from another room. One night, as he lay in bed, the hallway light flicked on. He heard their dog racing through the apartment, claws pounding the carpet, tags jingling wildly. Then scratching began at his door. At first, it sounded like the dog. Then it became violent. The door shook. The lights flickered on and off. Switches clicked rapidly in the living room. Scratching moved to the wall behind his bed, deep and furious, as if something were trapped on the other side. Gabriel cried and called his mother. When she came out, everything stopped. The dog had been asleep in her room the entire time, and from that point on, Gabriel avoided being alone whenever possible. Faucets turned on by themselves, doorknobs twisted violently while he showered, lights switched on without explanation. Once, at his father's house, his sister confessed that she'd seen a pitch-black figure standing over Gabriel as he slept, watching him silently for a long time. The fear followed him until another move, another apartment, another fresh start, and just like before, the activity faded. It was then that his mother finally told him the truth. She could see and hear them, too. His mother didn't tell the story all at once, and she waited until they were settled in the new apartment, until the nights were quiet again, and the fear had loosened its grip on Gabriel's chest. Even then, she spoke carefully, as if naming things too clearly might invite them back. She told him she had always been able to sense the dead. Not in the dramatic way people talked about in movies, not full apparitions or constant voices, just presences. Sounds where there shouldn't be any, conversations drifting through empty kitchens, cabinets opening and closing when no one was there. The sense that rooms were occupied even when they weren't. She said it had started when she was young, around the same age Gabriel had been when his experiences intensified. "I didn't want you to see what I saw," she admitted. "So I ignored it. That's how I survived." Ignoring them, she said, had worked. Eventually, when she stopped reacting, stopped acknowledging what was happening, the activity faded. Not because it was gone, but because it no longer had a reason to press itself forward. That frightened Gabriel more than anything else she could have said. It meant the experiences weren't random, they responded. His grandmother Elaine had never ignored it. Elaine was deeply spiritual in a way that felt old-fashioned rather than trendy. She prayed, not performatively, but instinctively. When Gabriel felt overwhelmed or unsettled, she was the one he went to. She never dismissed his fears. She listened, then offered prayers and quiet advice without dramatizing anything. Elaine told him it ran in the family. Not everyone inherited it, but it moved along bloodlines unpredictably, skipping generations or surfacing more strongly in certain people. Sensitivity, the ability to perceive what others filtered out automatically. She said it wasn't a curse, but it wasn't always a blessing either. The story that stayed with Gabriel the longest was about Elaine's grandmother's house in Del Rio, Texas. The house no longer stood, but its reputation had survived it. In the 1950s, it had been used as a brothel, catering to soldiers passing through. Gambling, drinking, sex, activities that left emotional residue long after the people involved were gone. Elaine described the stories the way someone recounts weather patterns rather than tragedies. Matter of fact, unembellished, women without faces, babies crying behind closed doors, laughter echoing in empty rooms, the sound of coins jingling on tables that no longer existed, a harsh female voice shushing the others, asserting control even in death. One story chilled Gabriel more than the rest. Elaine said, construction workers once uncovered the skeleton of an infant buried near the house. The implication was never stated outright, but it didn't need to be. Pregnancies had been inconvenient, disposable. Elaine's daughters, Gabriel's mother and aunt, had spent the night in that house once as teenagers. They hadn't lasted long. Sheets were pulled off the beds, feet grabbed, cabinets slammed. When Gabriel's mother prayed aloud, the activity intensified with fury. Only when she turned on the lights did it stop. After that night, his aunt refused to go back. Gabriel began to understand something then. The activity in his own life wasn't singular. It wasn't attached to one house, one spirit, or one object. It was contextual, environmental, emotional. His dreams had always been vivid, but during the height of his experiences, they had become something else entirely. They weren't symbolic, they were experiential. In his dreams, Gabriel wasn't himself. He occupied other bodies, saw through other eyes. He walked through houses he didn't recognize, touched walls he'd never seen. Once he dreamed he was a young woman standing in a beautifully furnished home with dark red walls and warm wooden accents. He recognized the place as hers, though he didn't know why. He walked into her bathroom, saw his reflection. Her reflection. Then he stepped into a bathtub filled with water and submerged himself completely. He woke gasping for air, heart racing, certain of one thing. She had drowned herself. The dreams drained him. He woke exhausted, emotionally wrung out, as if he'd lived entire lives overnight. They came more frequently when he was stressed or overtired, and less when he prayed or grounded himself in routine. For a month, he woke every night at 2:58 a.m. without fail. At the same time, his mother began waking at 3 a.m. in her own home, sensing a presence she refused to acknowledge. They didn't coordinate their responses. They didn't even discuss it much. They both ignored it. They both prayed. And then slowly, it stopped. As Gabrielle grew older, the experiences changed again. They became quieter, less intrusive. He still sensed people easily, read emotions instinctively, picked up on thoughts before they were spoken. It was part of why he wanted to study psychology. Understanding people felt natural to him, almost reflexive, but even that dulled with time. The sharper edges of his perception softened. He no longer felt drained by dreams. He slept through most nights. The world became less transparent, more solid. Sometimes he missed it. Other times he felt grateful. Elaine told him that sensitivity didn't disappear. It simply adjusted to what the person could handle. Those who fought it burned out. Those who indulged it too deeply lost balance. Those who respected it, acknowledged it without obsession, found equilibrium. Gabriel learned to do just that. He still believed, he still listened, but he didn't invite. The dead, he learned, didn't always want to frighten. Sometimes they only wanted to be acknowledged, and sometimes the most powerful protection wasn't confrontation or denial. It was boundaries. By the time Gabriel reached adulthood, the world had quieted. Not entirely, but enough that the constant vigilance of his adolescence was no longer necessary. The shadows no longer gathered in corners of his vision. The whispers didn't press themselves into silence-filled rooms. Nights passed without the familiar jolt of waking at the same minute, heart racing, senses flaring as if something unseen had brushed too close. He had learned slowly and imperfectly how to live with what he carried. College gave him structure, routine, a sense of control he hadn't realized he'd been missing. He studied psychology, drawn not just to behavior and cognition, but to the invisible forces that shaped people's lives, the traumas that lingered unspoken. The memories embedded so deeply they became instinct. Reading people still came easily to him, even if the sharp clarity of his childhood sensitivity had softened. He could sense discomfort before words betrayed it. He noticed tension in a room before arguments surfaced, but it no longer overwhelmed him. Occasionally, reminders surfaced, a dream that felt too detailed, a place that hummed with emotion the moment he stepped inside. Once, while visiting an old house with friends, he felt an unmistakable pressure at the threshold, as if the space itself were assessing him. He didn't enter. The feeling receded as soon as he stepped back. He didn't feel cowardly for it. He felt wise. Gabriel spoke to his grandmother Elaine often. She aged gracefully, her spirituality deepening rather than narrowing with time. When he told her that the visions had mostly stopped, that the dreams no longer left him exhausted, she nodded as if she'd expected nothing else. "You learned when to listen," she said, "and when not to." She reminded him that gifts weren't static things. They changed as people changed. Some were meant for a season to guide or protect during vulnerable years. Others lingered quietly, surfacing only when truly needed. Elaine believed Gabriel's experiences had sharpened his empathy, not cursed him with fear, that they had given him awareness without demanding devotion. Not everyone in the family had been so fortunate. His mother rarely spoke of her own experiences now. She had built her defenses early, ignoring, dismissing, pushing away anything that disrupted her sense of safety. It had worked for her, but Gabriel sensed the cost, a tightening, a refusal to look too closely at things she couldn't control. They didn't argue about it. They didn't need to. Both approaches had led to peace in their own way. Years later, when Gabriel moved into his own apartment for the first time, he noticed something immediately. Nothing followed him. The space felt neutral, quiet in a way that was honest rather than expectant. He slept deeply there, dreams fading quickly upon waking. He didn't sense watchers or echoes. The apartment felt like it belonged to the present alone. That realization brought unexpected relief. He had once feared that whatever he experienced would trail him forever, woven into his identity whether he wanted it or not. Instead, he discovered that awareness didn't require constant engagement. Sensitivity didn't mean vulnerability if it was paired with intention. The last significant experience came years later, quietly without drama. Gabriel dreamed he stood at the edge of a long hallway lined with doors. Each door felt heavy with memory, some warm, some suffocating. He understood instinctively that opening any of them would immerse him in a life not his own. At the far end of the hallway stood his grandmother. She didn't speak. She simply looked at him and gestured, not toward the doors, but toward a window at the side of the hall. Light spilled through it, soft and steady. When he woke, the dream stayed with him longer than most. It didn't feel like a message from the dead or a warning. It felt like closure. Gabriel carried that with him as he moved forward in life. He still believed in spirits and energy, in the way pain and joy imprinted themselves on places and people. He believed some families were more attuned to those imprints than others, not because they were chosen, but because they were open. But he no longer felt obligated to bear what wasn't his. When people shared their own stories with him, whispers in childhood homes, dreams that felt too real, sensations that defied logic, he listened without judgment. He never rushed to label their experiences or explain them away. He told them what Elaine had once told him. You don't have to invite everything that notices you. You don't have to deny what you feel either. Awareness is not the same as surrender. The past, he had learned, didn't disappear when ignored, but it didn't have to dominate the present either. Some doors were meant to remain closed, some gifts were meant to rest, and some stories, once acknowledged, were finally free to be quiet.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.